Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Net at Night with Sarah Lane for Amber MacArthur, episode 142 for March 10th, 2010. Rework. Net at Night is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/night. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/night. Time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California, in the USA. I am Leo Laporte.
And from San Francisco, California, also in the USA, I am Sarah Lane, filling in for the lovely Amber MacArthur in the very, very not boring Toronto.
She's doing, what is she on a flight? Or she's like, she gets so busy. She does all sorts of stuff.
You know, she is this fancy schmancy speaker.
Right.
And so she's always got these speaking engagements, and people flock far and wide to hear her expertise on a variety of things. And I believe She's having to travel somewhere for a speaking event tomorrow.
She's fancy schmancying again. But Sarah, I'm so glad to see you. We haven't seen you in ages.
I know. I think I haven't been on Net at Night. Well, I know I haven't been on Net at Night since the very beginning of October.
There's a lot has changed in your life. You're no longer a current TV.
No, I am not. I am once again a free agent. Current and I have parted ways amicably.
Not for long, I'm hoping. We're trying to get Sarah over here, of course. And
sort of been talking.
We'll see what we can do about that. And I saw via your Twitter, which is how I stay in touch with everybody.
Yeah, totally.
That your brain is good.
My brain is really good, everybody.
Yay! Maybe we should explain. You traveled. You did it around. I was so jealous. You left G4 Attack of the Show. And yes. You took your savings and you traveled around the world for a year.
For a year, yes. And there were two of us, so it would have been even more expensive had I been alone. But some of the countries that I went, I wouldn't actually have wanted to be alone. You know, the world, people do things differently in different countries.
Yeah.
So that was, yes. Yeah, so, I mean, this is a story that's been told many times, but it was a wonderful experience. The best year of my life by far. And what ended up happening, a lot of things ended up happening once I got back to the States, but I kind of missed the day-to-day life and came back here and settled back into the tech scene that I missed, even in LA. Started working for Revision 3, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's all on the Wikipedia page. But one of the fun little souvenirs I brought back from my trip was a brain parasite.
That's like something out of the Night Gallery.
You know what? They have this show on Discovery, and it's called, like, Creatures Living in My Brain or something. It's like a series that's designed to scare people. and my particular parasite was one of the featured episodes.
Hey, move your mic up a little bit because I'm getting a lot of pop in. So what's amazing is that when you went to the doctor diagnosed this, which must be a very rare thing. Maybe the doctor watches the Discovery Channel.
Well, what happened was I had no symptoms at all, except a headache, which, I mean, talk about freaking out. The day before I had, it's called a tonic-clonic seizure, and otherwise known as a grand mal, that's what they used to call
it. Wow.
Which is, you know, it's a pretty significant thing. You're unconscious and, you know, blah, 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 blah. All the bad stuff you think might happen happens. The day before, Martin Sargent and I drove up to Petaluma in my car. And I drove because it was my car to do this weekend fun the day before this happened. So I think to myself, oh my gosh,
this is much worse. Yeah.
I mean, if this would have happened on the freeway going 75 miles an hour, sorry, sometimes I push the speed limit a little bit. Don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what happened. Long story short.
And you had Dr. House, and Dr. House said, oh, what do you have here? is about.
Another little piece of trivia is that this condition, supposedly, I don't watch the show. I know Colleen could probably verify this. My specific condition was a weird thing on the first episode ever of House.
Wow. I'm telling you, your doctor watches a lot of TV.
Yeah, right. What they pretty much said to me was, this is very rare. This really doesn't happen in the U.S. Have you been anywhere, you know, like India or
sleeping with camels in Mongolia,
Bolivia recently, expecting me to say, of course not. And I went, yeah, actually, I sure did.
All of those.
All of those. all the above. So that's kind of what happened is it's just a sort of a it's a crazy stroke of bad luck.
But the good news is that you're well. Are you cured? What is?
Yeah. Well, you know, what happens is it's a parasite that sort of turns into this parasitic disease, and you know it affects a lot of people differently. So my case is unique to someone else's case. So you know what happened to me is not necessarily the same for anybody else who has this. Although millions of people have it all over the world, you just don't hear about it if you live in the U.S. The deal is that at the beginning, they said, okay, well, you now have epilepsy, and we might need to surgically remove these tumors from your brain.
Whoa.
Brain surgery, open up your head.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, you know, this is all within a course of a week, and I was pretty medicated and freaked out, and I happened to be stuck in L.A. at the time and couldn't fly, and it was just, I mean, it's just silly. So, what ended up happening was we went through a round of, it's kind of like an antiparasitic radiation treatment. It's, you know, oral pills. And, you know, the brain surgeon said, you know, if you don't have to get brain surgery, I really don't recommend it because people get out of brain surgery and they forget how to talk. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen. It's very, right temporal lobe is a very, very delicate area, especially for us lefties. So that what we decided to do was go through some treatment, and it ended up that I was extremely receptive to it, and I got a pretty good prognosis in December. And because I'm about to do some traveling, I'm going to Austin on Friday, and then I'm going to Japan for a couple of weeks.
Oh, that's right. I'm so jealous. That looks fun. I've been watching you buzzing about that. Yeah.
Well, I'm getting all these great tips from people, too, that I know have either been there or maybe they, you know, are fans and they live there and could just give me tips. It's been great. It's like the research part is almost the best part for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, went and got another MRI last week. And my neurologist pretty much said, you're almost like this never happened.
Yay. You know? Oh, yeah, Sarah, yeah. I'm so happy. I was, you know, it's been tough. That's great.
Huh. No kidding.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm really happy too. And sorry to make that such a long story. I know many of you have heard this already so many times.
Well, I wanted everybody to know.
I just want to gloat.
Yay. Good brain.
Just want to gloat. Yes, go brain.
So we've got a great show. We're going to talk to the guys who wrote a new book called Rework.
Yeah.
David Hanemeyer Hansen is the creator of Ruby on Rails. Jason Fried, along with David, one of the two founders of 37 Signals, which is an incredible web development company. They wrote a book that was a huge bestseller called Getting Real, I think it was. And they've done it again. They've got a new book called Rework, which is a business book that tells you how to succeed in business without being a workaholic.
That comes across as like an MBA killer.
Yeah.
This book is the MBA killer.
I mean, it's things like go to sleep.
The hard way.
Meetings are toxic. Ignore the details early on. Building to flip is building to flop.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, a lot of companies say we're gonna sell. Well, this is our exit strategy, right?
Yeah. Well, that's how. Go to sleep.
That's a good one, isn't it?
If that's advice in a business book, I will read the book.
I think it's great.
Because I don't know about you, Leo, because I have a theory that you don't actually do a whole lot of sleeping because that's the reason you know all the things that you do. But if I don't sleep regularly, I'm not productive at all. I'm somewhat of a nightmare, not smart, not on my game. And I can imagine that a mistake a lot of people make that are trying to make something of their new businesses, they burn the candle at both ends and they end up making bad decisions.
They say foregoing sleep is a bad idea. Sure, you get those extra hours right now, but you pay in spades later. You destroy your creativity, morale, and attitude.
I believe it.
The costs are stubbornness, lack of creativity, diminished morale, and irritability. What are you talking about? Anyway, we'll talk to David Hanemeyer Hansen, who also created Ruby on Rails, and Jason Fried in just a little bit. Amber's just dying now that she's not going to be on this show because she loves both of these guys, and they love her. But I'm really thrilled you could be here with us to do that. Before that, though, as usual, we have some really good links for you. I have a little rant.
Oh, do you?
Yes, and I'm going to talk about a poor woman in New Zealand who we ambushed on Sunday.
Thanks. Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah. I talked to her this morning on Kiwi Radio, though. I'll tell you the whole story in a second. Before we do, though, I do want to mention our friends at Go to Assist Express. This is the Citrix company. Does a product that is specifically for people who do support, whether you're in a software business, you have to support your software, or you're an IT professional. Telephone support is no fun. You know, walking somebody through a fix is awful. Go to Assist lets you do what you really want to do, which is get your hands into the machine and fix the darn thing. It's faster, it's more efficient, and Go to Assist Express is built for the IT pro. It does so many great things. It gives you a chance, for instance, to have 8 sessions at the same time, so you don't have to wait for a scan or an install to complete. You just move right on. You can drag files from your computer to there, so if you've got the fix in a file, drag it right over. You could do unattended support if you need to. Very easy to set up. Your supportees don't have to have it set up ahead of time. In fact, I was on the line with my mom. I was Skyping her, and she was complaining about Intuit and Quicken, and she couldn't get it working. I said, well, Mom, here, click this link. So I pasted the link in. She clicked it. It installed within 30 seconds, and all of a sudden, I'm in there fixing the problem. Go to Assist Express. You could try it free for 30 days right now by going to gotoassist.com/night. Now, here's the good news. Mac or PC. Works with both. You can support a Mac from a PC, support a PC from a Mac. No limitations. There's integrated live chat, so you could talk to your client as you're working with them. Two-way screen sharing, so you can show them your screen they can see what you're talking about. It could tell you what software is running on the machine, the operating system, the programs, the security software, and you fix the problems very easily, very quickly, and completely securely with 128-bit end-to-end encryption. It really is a good program. Try it free for 30 days. And they have day passes if you're an occasional support pro. But this is really this is for the serious professional. Go to assist.com/night. Free for 30 days right now. Give it a try. So, Sarah, do you know about the Streamy Awards? Of course you do.
Yes, I do. Now, was last year the first?
I think it was. I hadn't heard of them before
because
that.
I feel like this is the second annual Streamy Awards. Here's the problem that I have with the Streamy Awards, besides the fact that it's such a sort of wannabe Oscars thing. I just don't know why web people try to make the same rules for themselves.
It seems like Hollywood, doesn't it? It seems like Hollywood's doing this.
Well, it seems
this.
Like wannabe Hollywood, right. Kind of. Now, I'm not saying that I don't like a good Hollywood show. I was watching the Oscars on Sunday like everybody
else. That was fun, yeah.
But the problem I have with the Streamies is that, well, okay, I guess you do what you want. You want to be like the Oscars for the web, fine. But it doesn't really make any sense to me why they're called the Streamy Awards, because really they're just...
None of them are streaming!
No!
That's one problem I have with it. There is one category.
I think that they say they make themselves feel better by saying, well, many of our shows can be streamed when downloaded.
No.
That's not what streaming means to me.
It very much feels like these are regular TV shows that are on the net, you know, like right. Dr. Horrible and stuff like that. And listen to the nominees for Best Female Actor in a Comedy Web Series: Justine Bateman, Lisa Kudrow, Joanna Cassidy. I mean, these are Hollywood people. They're, of course, Felicia Day's in there. You know, and our good friend Shira Lazar is hosting it, and I don't have any problem with that. But we are nominated, by the way. We're nominated for in one category, the one category that seems to have anything to do with streaming, which is Best Live Production in a Web Series.
And that's for Twit?
For Twit.tv, competing against Kevin Pollak's chat show. That's a good show. The Rad Nerd Show, Fantasy Football Live, and CoinOp TV Live. These are the only live shows in the whole bunch. So the only real streaming ones.
So when they say Twit.tv, you've got quite a few shows.
Well, no, but that's fine. I'm willing to. I'll accept it.
You're okay.
But here's the deal. I thought, oh, this is great, and they want you to. You know, it's like the Emmys. You prepare a reel, which judges then look at, and they will vote. They handle the distribution, though. You can't do it. You can't send it to the judges. You can't send them a link to your website. They want to, you give them a clip and then they create the DVD. And
this is already backwards.
Yeah. And it's like $150. I can't, hey, Dane, what's the, what is it going to cost us? I can't remember. But it would end up costing us considerable amount of money. You can send it to a small subset of the judges. But if you're going to send it to all the judges, it's thousands of dollars. And where does the money go? The Streamy Awards. What does it cost to send
a judge, I think.
How much a judge?
$6 a judge.
Oh, it's only six. But there are how many judges?
Well, there could be thousands. I think that there was like 2,200.
22. So we're talking $12,000+.
Yeah, there was.
Let me get this straight, because this just sounds like a bunch of hoonanny to me.
Yeah, well, I decided not to participate. I said, well, that's, you know, I'm not going to give you thousands of dollars so I can get an award.
Certainly not. And you have to take it upon yourself to send it to as many people who are Streamy Award judges.
They send it for you. You just pay them to do it. I would like to give them streaming link. But no.
Right? Come on. Stop this. Stop the insanity. How about, yes, here's the link to my show, which I've been nominated for. So I've got reason being here. And you, judge, watch it. And you decide if you think I'm the best in my category.
Right.
And maybe we can all save ourselves a trip to the, I don't know.
I'm with you. It's a little too Hollywood for me. It seems a little odd. And then when they said, oh, and by the way, you know, you're going to pay us $6 a judge to be, you know, judged. I thought, yeah, I'm just going to pass. Yeah. So if we don't win the Streamy Award, it's fine. Kevin Pollak, good luck to you.
If you do win, are you going to go up there and be gracious and do a Sandra Bullock kind of a speech about how your mother influenced you? And
I loved that speech, by the way. She is just classy.
Got to tell you, didn't like the movie, but I sure do like her as a woman.
Yep.
I really like her.
And what about that Catherine Bigelow,
what she shares with us.
Yeah.
No, I thought the movie was...
I didn't see the movie.
Totally overrated, but sure do like that Sandy Bullock, tell you what.
Well, it shows she's more than just a, you know, romantic comedy person.
True. Very true. Yeah, it wasn't one of those. It wasn't all about Steve.
She seemed real. She seemed very real. I really enjoyed that. Anyway, so that's my rant. It's not a horrible rant. I thought, you know, do we really need awards shows in the first place? And if we do, can we not have them be like so Hollywood? And the Webbies always bug me for the same reason.
Well, the Webbies have gotten weird. They're not even, it's like, you don't even go and find out who wins. I remember going to the Webbies back in like 1998.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Something that it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was different. It was very
grassroots.
Different. And it was wacky. And now it's like this, you already know who's getting the award and it's over in New York. And I don't even really get it. I haven't paid attention in a few years. But there are quite a few award shows, it seems. And they've got their own little niche. And the Streamies is touting itself as, we're the most kind of old Hollywood legitimate, glittery, we'll put out a red carpet for you, get dressed up kind of a show. But, you know, the more people from the old, you know, old Hollywood, makes me sound like I'm talking about Marilyn Monroe or something, but the folks in kind of the old ways of doing things, the old media folks controlling a show, which it really seems like to me, this is one of those shows more than the others. And then you have web people sort of going, ooh, it would be so great to be recognized by the big kids. That just bothers me. You know, this is just, it's a newer medium.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to play that game.
Pander backwards.
Yeah, good. You're with me.
I don't play that game.
We agree. We agree on so much, Sarah Lane.
I know.
We agree. Let's get some links. I really want to get David and Jason on here. As quickly as we can.
Absolutely.
By the way, did you see Felicia Day? Now she's got a real job.
Yeah. Speaking
of Hollywood.
Speaking of web people making it big
in a movie.
It's going to be, as I understand it, and this is kind of weird because I was confused about this at first, on Sci-Fi, it's sort of an original movie for television, which happens all the time now on a variety of cable networks. She's going to play Little Red Riding Hood, but kind of like the badass, kill the werewolves or the wolves, however spin they're going to make on it. But she's going to play the lead in this movie, which is, for her, it would be hard to say, oh, Felicia Day, sellout, because she's been trying to make it as an actress for a long time.
Yeah, and that's fine.
And not that she hasn't already, because she has been an actress on television and movies.
Right, she was in Buffy, right?
She was in Buffy, as well as something else, I'm afraid. I don't remember at the time.
I love Dr. Horrible. I think she's really talented. I wish her all the best.
The Guild is very smart, and you got to love her for, she's like the Tina Fey of the web. She just decided to do it herself.
Right.
And it's good. So it's good. Kudos to her, because I think it sounds like something that's right up her alley. But you kind of do have to go, see, we're still doing this thing where if somebody really makes it, they're back on TV again. The web is the stepping stone for the big deal. Right. But maybe I would feel that way too.
Right.
If I get into the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie, I'm probably not.
You just want to make out with Johnny Depp. I know.
Maybe
I
do.
What was that? What was that tweet you said about was it Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah, future baby daddy.
Future baby daddy.
and of course it's in jest, Johnny. I know you're watching. You've got a family.
He's stalking you.
Just want to be your friend.
No, he's been stalking you. I know. I could tell. He's following you around.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Good.
Oh yeah. He's got
feel so much better now.
He's got Lane fever.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is that at the, not to talk too much about the Oscars, but they were interviewing Amanda, I hope I say her last name right, Seyfried, who's in Big Love and was in Mean Girls and does a lot of stuff now. And she's going to be in a big picture adaptation of Little Red Riding Hood.
Uh-oh.
Directed by Catherine Harris.
Oh, dear.
Twilight movies. So she's kind of talking about it. And I had just read about the Felicia Day sci-fi thing, and I went, oh, gee, well, Little Red Riding Hood's obviously a big thing now, so there's going to be a big movie and then a TV movie, which I feel like takes a little bit of the shine off of Felicia's deal, but they were probably in the works completely independently of each other.
How old is Seyfried? Because she was there with Miley Cyrus, and it was so obvious they were trying to get the Oscars to appeal, and then they mentioned, and coming up, the cast of Twilight. Like, I care.
I know that there was actually somebody that in the monologue, Martin and Baldwin, they called out to one of the guys, like, hey, New Hollywood. And I couldn't tell you what he was in. I know that he's like a teen throb.
Welcome to my world. Now you know how old I feel.
Leo.
Who is that? I don't know who that is. She's actually, she's 25, Amanda is. Or she will be.
Yeah, I don't think she's so young. No. She's young-ish.
The Miley Cyrus thing fooled me because she's like teenager.
She's like 17.
Yeah.
Was last I checked.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's not make ourselves feel any older.
So I'm trying to make a internet star. Remember Conan O'Brien last week picked a random woman to follow. Yes. He did the right thing. He asked her ahead of time.
He wasn't following anybody at first.
Right.
He's following nobody. So it was kind of like, who's going to be the first?
And it wasn't a contest, right? He just picked somebody.
Yeah, he just wanted to be weird about it and pick somebody randomly.
Well, it's not that weird. Do you think it's weird? Because we did the same thing on Sunday. So
it was your idea, now was it?
Well, kind of. Well, Conan had the first, but then I thought, well, we could do that. And then Kevin Rose egged me on. You know, one thing you got to know about Kevin, if you hang out with him, he doesn't do bad things himself, but he will get you to do bad things. That's my story anyway.
Yes, he is. What's the word for somebody
like
that?
He's an instigator.
He's an instigator. And he likes to manipulate people to do the things that he can't do, or else he'll look bad.
I'm blaming him. But he picked. Now he picked. So what we said is, okay, Kevin picked somebody at random. He did a search on Twitter. Actually, this is clever, for the phrase, I hate technology. He wanted to pick somebody who hated technology. And he just came back from New Zealand, so he found a young woman in New Zealand. Lisa Tickled Pink is her handle. She was following three people. She had tweeted once, and it was, I hate technology. And so we said, follow her. She now has 13, as of this recording, 13,818 followers.
Amazing.
Conan's woman is only 15,500. I want to get to 100,000.
For Lisa Tickled Pink.
For Lisa Tickled Pink. Now, I met her this morning I did a she's from Auckland, New Zealand. The Radio Whammo in Auckland, very nice guy, Glenn Williams. I've done an interview with him before when the New Zealand blackout campaign was going on. Called me, said, I want to bring him in, bring her into the studio. So he did, and I did the radio show this morning and met her. She's a very nice person. She's a design student at the university there. The reason she was on Twitter was an assignment. Her professor said, you've got to create a Twitter account. So this poor woman, I said, well, was it, you know, you woke up Tuesday morning and what? And she said, I had, you know, 5,000 emails from people who had followed me.
Because she had notifications on.
She had notifications on. I said, if there were any cost or problems, I will cover it. And then, and to thank her, I said, well, I'm going to send you April 3rd when the iPads come out. I'm ordering one for you and I'm going to send it to you.
Oh, Leo, that is so nice.
Well, I felt terrible. They're not going to have iPads in New Zealand for a while, so I thought, well, I'll send her one. And in order to get this count up, I'm going to take at random somebody who's following Lisa Tickled Pink. Will Jason Calacanis has a random Twitter follower picker.
Uh-huh.
And I will pick a random Twitter follower of Lisa Tickled Pink, and that person will win an iPad as well. So I think this is a fun campaign to get Lisa Tickled Pink internet famous overnight. And she's actually, you know what, she's neat. She's doing a project combining people in Chile, Ireland, and New Zealand. It's a web project. She's a designer. So she's a very nice person. I really enjoyed meeting her. And she's being a very good sport about it.
Well, here's the thing. I think initially, the sort of email freak out, oh gosh, I've been hacked or whatever.
No, she thought she did something wrong.
But yeah, well, you don't know what's going on. And so I had heard about this. I went over to her account, saw that it was locked and thought, okay, well, she doesn't want to play.
That she unlocked
And then, you know, eventually, obviously, she figured out what was going on. She is cute, by the way.
She's adorable. She's got the great Kiwi accent. She's fun.
Oh, I love that. I like it better than the Aussie accent. No offense to any Aussies, but there's something about the New Zealand one that's even cooler.
It's really cute. So if you want to see our interview with her, it's on youtube.com/twit. We put it up on our YouTube account. You can watch our conversation with Lisa Tickled Pink and Glenn Williams there in the studios at Whammo Radio in New Zealand. And I just, part of what I like about this is the global nature of it, you know? And the serendipity.
Many folks decided to. Yeah. Well, the thing is, too, you know, you say you feel bad about doing it because I don't really know why. I mean, not only does she get many followers, as you know.
Yeah, she said, what do I do with all these followers?
Most people's Twitter accounts, right. It takes a long time to get up to 13,000. Right. Most of my friends are nowhere near that.
Right.
And she gets an iPad.
Yeah, so she's actually, now she's doing all right.
It's like totally making out here.
I feel like I've made it good. And by the way, I asked her why Lisa Tickled Pink. She says, well, I like to wear pink. And she was, in fact, wearing pink when we talked to her. So
now she's wearing pink and tickled.
And she is tickled. So, yeah, I feel pretty good about how it came out. And Kevin did a good job picking somebody completely at random. It was pretty funny.
Hey, was it really at random? He was just a New Zealand.
Do you think he knows her? Like there was something going on there? No.
You never know with him, but I doubt it. I doubt it. You never know, though.
No, I don't think he met her. He didn't get to Auckland. He did. You saw that crazy bungee jump that he did, though.
I sure did. Yeah. Now, you have never done the bungee.
No, never going to do the bungee.
Me either. Now, I've gone skydiving, and that was scary but fun. It was one of my life goals, and I did it, and I don't really have an urge to do it again.
Wait, where did you do it?
Bungee jumping. The skydiving?
Yeah.
Down in Hollister.
Oh, you did it here? Okay. It wasn't part of your world tour.
Here. Oh, okay. No, this was years ago. It was like, I don't know, I was bored in college one day on skydiving. But the bungee jumping doesn't appeal to me, and even watching his bungee jump, as amazing as it was, I feel like, you know, at the moment he jumped, and he does a real nice jump, you know, very gazelle-like or swan-like, whatever. You know, it looks like, you know, in my mind, I think this is it. Life is going to flash. It's going to break. I just don't know. I don't. No bungee.
400. No bungee. 433 feet. Ugh. 430. That's 43 stories. Wow.
No.
Why is it we always end up talking about Kevin Rose, by the way? Can we stop talking about Kevin Rose? I'm getting jealous. Anyway, he was on Twit this week, and that's how this whole thing happened. Look at this. This is crazy. And you know what? Kevin's very brave. He just went. Look at this. He just goes.
This is his very ballet-like, wee.
Look at that. He did a beautiful job.
Oh. I think having the camera on you makes you want to be less of a wuss because you know you're going to have to watch it later.
I'd be crying.
I wouldn't jump.
No.
Somebody would have to push me.
Yeah, I'm never going to do that. Crazy. Crazy.
It looked like it was over sort of like a
crevasse.
Rocky ravine, you know?
Some horrible place. What if you... Oh.
Not even over a lake.
No, wasn't it beautiful? No.
Hills of Afghanistan.
Who did we know that did a bungee jump and came back with it? Was it Alison Strong came back with a... Like a hemorrhaged eye?
Oh, geez.
Somebody.
Was that?
I think it was Allison.
See, that's the only story you need to say,
no,
hey,
not me.
People get hurt badly bungee jumping if they survive at all.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do something else with our $250 or however much it costs for him to do that.
Before we get our guests on in just a little bit, I want to mention our friends at Squarespace. They do Sarah's website. They do our Inside Twit blog. It's more than a blog platform, though. It's a web hosting platform plus great software. To learn a little bit more about Squarespace, we actually went to New York and visited with the Squarespace folks. Let's just take a little visit, a little trip to New York and squarespace.com.
I am Dane Atkinson. I am the CEO of Squarespace. I think what shows the power of Squarespace best is some of the front-end tools you can use to change the way your site looks. I love the fact that you can change the column widths and the entire site changes in real time, or you can click on any image and change it automatically. So now I'm in on a site. I'm going to change the widths. As you can see, the site on top is changing in real time at the same time. And this is not just a visual change. All the code behind it, everything else is changing, which doesn't happen anywhere else.
I'm Tadeo, and I'm a user interface designer. I designed the iPhone interface, so this is a beta version for the next one. And you can edit your post, add your images, see your statics. It's really cool. It's really cool working for Squarespace, actually. I love this company.
It's great stuff, and I think you'll love it, too, if you just give it a try. Squarespace.com. Use the promo code NIGHT, and you'll save 10% off your Squarespace site. Sites start as little as $8 a month, but you could try it absolutely free right now. Go to squarespace.com/NIGHT and give them a try. You can import your blog from your WordPress, your TypePad, your movable type, Blogger. You can export back out, too, so you're never at a loss. You're never stuck. I just think these guys really know what they're doing. They make great stuff. So many of my friends use Squarespace now, and I think you might want to try it, too. Squarespace.com/night. We thank them so much for their support of the Net at Night show. Get David and Jason on the line here. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
David, where are you?
I am out in Malibu.
Oh, looks good. That's the life.
Yeah.
Are you there, too, Jason?
No, I'm in Chicago.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you know, little old me in Chicago. I live.
So
some of the sunlight's reflecting off David's sunglasses into my screen. So that's
at least you get something. Look at the clouds behind him floating by.
Are those even real? Those look like cloud walls.
It's all photoshopped. I'm in a basement somewhere in Chicago. Actually, this is just a green screen.
Programmers don't need sun, David. What are you doing? First of all, congratulations! A new version of Rails just came out. Did it not?
Not quite. It's coming out shortly, but we're not quite there yet. There's a beta out of Rails 3.
That's what I saw, Rails 3 beta. What's new in Rails 3?
Oh, there's a ton of new good stuff. It's sort of a technical thing to go into, but it's better, faster, funner, more exciting.
That's all you have to say.
Awesomer.
That's awesomer. Yeah. Rails was kind of originally developed to support 37 Signal's own projects, right?
Yeah, it was actually extracted from our first project, Basecamp. I started building Basecamp, and I just started, as part of building Basecamp, building all these generic tools. And then somewhere halfway through the building of Basecamp, I realized, hey, there's enough here for a toolbox that other people could use. And so we released it some 6 months after Basecamp came out.
That's awesome. 37 Signals really is a model for kind of the modern company. Getting Real was your first book about building software, about running a business. What's new in Rework, Jason? Is this...
Yeah, so Rework is really more about business. Getting Real was more about software development. So it only applied to a small portion of the audience out there. And Rework is really about business. It's not about software. It's not about design or programming. So it can apply to a variety of businesses, you know, from restaurants to dry cleaners to, you know, any small business particularly or a group inside of a larger company.
I love, we were just, Sarah and I were just going through the some of the chapters, and we really like the one about get more sleep.
Yeah. That's important. I mean, especially when you need to look pretty in Malibu, you need to sleep well.
Absolutely. I need my 8.5 hours. Otherwise, it's just not going to work out. This world just doesn't come by itself if I get less than that.
But really, the point of that one, though, of course, is that, you know, there's sort of this obsession with workaholism, especially in America, where people are just working longer and longer hours, and they think that they can keep burning and burning and burning more. But you can't really compartmentalize burnout. And if you're tired, you're just tired. You can't make it up with one night's sleep. You know, you got to be consistent about your sleep. You have to get good sleep in order to do good work.
Couldn't agree more. That's not the gist of the book, by the way, Sleep More, but it's just
no.
One of the things. Now, when you did Getting Real, it was a virtual book more, wasn't it? I mean, it was a PDF, a download. I guess you could have bought a printed copy of it.
It was a PDF originally, and then we did a paperback with Lulu on demand.
Right.
And then we also give the book away for free as HTML online. So it's, you know, paperback, PDF, or free.
You're doing the same thing with Rework, or is this is more like a real book?
Rework is a real book. There's a hardcover in the U.S. I think there's a paperback in U.K. It's available, I think, it's going to be in about 10 languages. There's also a Kindle version, and there's an audiobook as well, which you can get on iTunes or Audible.
Oh, good. We should have made that our Audible pick.
Well, you can soon.
I will. Yeah, okay. It's going to be an Audible pick.
It's on Audible now, yeah.
This is stuff that you learned, though, during doing 37 Signals?
Yeah, the book is really...
All of this stuff was extractions, and... That was one of the things we've been asked about. What's in this book? Is this just rehashing of the old ideas? And in some ways, it is. It's a compilation of everything we learned over the past 10 years of running this business. I don't believe in business books that are dedicatedly written. I don't believe that you can actually just sit down and just come up with great ideas. It doesn't work like that. So what we did was instead look back. What have we learned over the past 10 years? How can we present the best of those ideas as succinctly as possible? For people to learn something from that. It doesn't work to just sit down and invent business ideas. It doesn't work to sit down and invent good policies or anything else like that. You have to extract it from a real business, from actually real experiences. So that just takes time. Like business books, and this is a random general one, and people would just write dedicated business books. If you're going to write something every 2 years, how are you going to learn enough to put that into a book that's worth reading? I've read a fair amount of business books where you read through the first 40, 50 pages and you get the point. I mean, it didn't need to be more than that because that's what the experience merited over the past like 2 or 3 years that author gathered those. So if you want to actually reach a book that's like 150, 200 pages, you need years to collect all that stuff.
This is the kind of book that I need, I think, for doing tours.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys, one of the sections, competitors that a few essays are under that I'll just read off. Don't copy, pick a fight, underdo your competition, and then who cares what they're doing? That's really interesting to me because I can't think of really any companies who operate that way. Everyone cares what the other company, the competitor's doing so that they can do it better or they can do it first. I mean, you're seeing that right now, especially with like geolocation. You know, that's a good example of something. They really care what the other companies are doing. So, I mean, how do you think differently than that?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to the competition, you know, you have a limited amount of attention to begin with. And I think you're better off spending it on your customers and your own products than worrying about what other people are doing the whole time. Mm-hmm. You can't pay attention to your competitors completely and your customers completely and your products completely and your employees completely and your vision completely. You have to make some decisions. So we'd rather spend our time making the people we know who use our own products very happy with them instead of worrying about customers we don't have yet that are, you know, being approached by other competitors. Mm-hmm. I actually heard a great quote yesterday for the first time. Henry Ford said it. He said, the competitors you should be worried about are the ones that don't care about you. They're the ones who are actually focused on building their own business.
Ooh.
And I think that that's totally true.
That's great.
Instead of worrying about everybody, you know, there's this Cold War going on, especially in the software world, where everyone's trying to one-up everybody else. You know, it's, you know, this company does search, so we have to do search. And they have this feature, we have to do two more features to counteract their one feature. And it's just this Cold War. It's the same Cold War that happened, you know, with countries. Everyone's trying to outspend each other and out-militarize each other. And really, there are very few winners in that world. So
and
I just
everyone
think
ends up looking the same.
Everyone looks the same, and it's very expensive. It's very, very hard to win a Cold War. Incredibly expensive, super resource intensive. So we just feel like you're better off just stepping out of that game and focus on the things that you know work for customers that like what you do, and leave it at that. And you can do really, really well that way.
So you think somebody like Apple's making a mistake, say, by suing HTC or worrying about HTC ripping them off?
I think they're absolutely making a mistake. I think that it's just a huge distraction. It only shines the light on HTC that they're apparently a threat to Apple.
Right.
And Gruber wrote this up recently at Daring Fireball, and I think he did it wonderfully, that the place to take this fight is in the marketplace.
Yep.
Apple is already so far ahead with the iPhone. Why are you guys running scared about this stuff? It just seems like it's playing right into HTC's hand, and if I was HTC, I'd be happy about that suit. I mean, not if they actually end up losing $400 million. Maybe I wouldn't be so happy, but the attention and the PR around it is fabulous.
It's not a good long-term strategy. So, I mean, I've been devouring this book because for the first time in my life, I'm an entrepreneur, which I never thought I would be. I'm a businessman. You kind of say that business is like software. What do you mean by that, Jason?
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's like businesses should be malleable. We're not building bridges here. We're not building skyscrapers. You know, you're building a business, a company that can change. It can iterate. You can try new things. We try new stuff all the time, and some stuff works, some stuff doesn't. Our business itself has bugs. You know, things aren't right all the time, and you fix them as you go. I think when people think of their business as this monolithic structure that has to have a lot of structure and has to have a lot of policy and a lot of, you know, rebar in it so it can't change, then you're kind of screwing yourself. So that's sort of why we like to think of business as software. And you have different versions over the years, and hopefully it gets better. And that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah, iterate.
It's a key counteract to the notion of this is how we do things around here.
Right.
There's few phrases I hate more than that phrase. Like that in itself, justifying what you're doing by what you're doing is so circular and wrong that it's just incredible. But you hear that all the time. People are sort of trapped in their existing ways of doing things. And that comes from treating your company more like a building than and a piece of source code that you can refactor and change and add and subtract from.
Right. I'm just, I want, it's funny because one of your reviewers, was it Kathy Sierra? Said, I want to rip out every page and tape it to my wall. And I almost want to read it because the way it's structured is very simple. It's kind of one idea a page or a page and a half. And you really just want to stop and go, oh, wait, okay, let me think about that for a while.
And then, no, don't stop. Don't stop.
Don't stop?
Keep going.
No,
really, the whole thing with the book is it's short. It's a short book. It's a quick read. You can finish it in a few hours because aren't you supposed to be doing something? Like these business books that take you a week or two or three to read just seem like a waste
of time.
That's
a good point, yeah.
You know, the whole point of this book is to give you some ideas and make you think a little bit and then get on with your job and get on with your work and do something. It's not to sit in front of our book for weeks at a time.
You say something that is kind of contrary to what a lot of people tell me, which is learning from mistakes is overrated. You say failure isn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, there's this weird obsession, especially in the tech world, with failure. Yeah. Everyone's telling you to like fail early, fail often.
Fail up, that is, they say.
What is like that? Yeah, what is that advice? Fail often? What kind of advice is that? When did that become this accepted advice? And that the idea that failure is a prerequisite for success, or it's a character builder. People feel like they have to get failure out of the way, as if you can get it out of the way. I mean, I don't understand that point of view at all. So our take is that there's certainly something to be learned from failure. There's no question about it. But you're better off learning most of your lessons from the things that work well, that you should learn from your successes. Focus on the things that have gone right for you and do those things again. That's where we think the real lessons are.
And I think the key part here is also, if you think that failure is so natural that it should happen to you, you'll start picking really bad business ideas and not looking at the odds.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, well, failure is going to happen anyway. Why try to improve my odds? Why try to just have a better shot at making it? If I'm going to fail regardless, I might as well just go for the moon. I might as well just go to see, hey, can I build a $1 billion business? I mean, I would fail anyway, so why not?
Well, yeah, you make a really good point that I'm taking to heart here, which is, you know, we always talk and focus so much on growth, but that's not necessarily always the best idea to grow as big as you can.
Yeah, there's a weird obsession in the business world with growth again, or, you know, building a $1 billion company. Like, why? Like, what's the point, really? I mean, you could say the point is $1 billion, but what's wrong with $1 million? When did $1 million become a small amount of money? When did having a business that generates $10 million a year not become a good, cool thing to do? I don't understand this obsession with big, big, big all the time. And typically what ends up happening is people aren't really that happy working at these big companies. And the big companies are very slow and they're not really innovating.
Right.
Most of the innovation, you know, when you get to these really big size companies, they have to acquire innovation by buying the small guys. The small guys are where the innovation happens. That's where the excitement happens. And I think you can do that, and I think you'll have a much better time doing that. It's a lot easier too. Like David was saying earlier about the odds. I mean, the odds to create a small business that does very well for everybody involved are significantly higher than building a $1 billion company and, you know, not getting any sleep along the way. So play the odds, you know, build a great little company that's doing incredibly well. You can generate millions of dollars a year in profits. Who's going to be ashamed of that? And you can enjoy it and you can get to sleep. And that to me is really what it's all about.
I've often,
I think that that's what's keeping a lot of people from following a variety of dreams is that it just sounds too hard.
It's too hard. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it does sound hard.
There's too much infrastructure. There's too much, fear of failure, fear of not being able to sleep or have a family or, you know, those are the fears I've had all this time. Leo, I know you said you weren't an entrepreneur for a long time. You were always working for other people. I mean, that's all legitimate stuff.
Well, you know what drove me is that not wanting to work for anybody anymore, wanting control. I wonder how many entrepreneurs do this because they just want to do their own thing. They don't want somebody telling them what to do.
Go ahead, David.
Key misconception here is also that to be an entrepreneur, that word in itself has so many bad connotations.
Right.
It means risking everything.
Right.
It means putting your family at risk, putting your healthcare at risk, putting all these things at risk because you have to go all in right away. That's just not true. I mean, the way we built our software company was doing work on the side. We built Basecamp as a side project while we had a real business just doing design and doing consulting. Because you don't need to just throw away all your safety nets on day one and just charge after this thing with everything you have. You can invest less than everything on the first hand and still come out a winner.
Right.
It's not a requirement to give up everything. And I think that's just what's so scary. And it should be scary. It should be scary to risk everything. So start with less than that. Start with just dedicating a few hours here and there to building something small.
Small is okay.
Yeah, small is not a stepping stone. That's the thing, yeah.
Right.
It's fine.
It's a small book, and it's a great book, and it's 2 hours long, and you can get it on Audible. I'm glad to see. I should have made this my Audible pick, but I'm going to make it a post-facto pick. Rework. You can get it free from audible.com, or get it in hardcover from Crown Publishing. It's out right now, and it is. You want to devour it, I have to say, but you also want to absorb it. It's really inspirational, really exciting.
And, thanks, Leo.
And I'll tell you, for somebody like me who's trying to figure out how to do this in this new economy, in this new way, it's nice to see people who are doing it in the new economy and doing it right and well and not giving up their lives. And it's just encouraging to have somebody else say, yeah, you can do it this way. You don't have to do it the way they used to do it.
Yeah, and let me just throw this out real quick, too. I think in many ways, sort of the American dream has been perverted. I think before the American dream was basically just simply financial independence.
Right.
And somehow it's become this thing where you have to build a $1 billion company now. And it should get back to the way it was, which is financial independence is totally fine. And that could mean you make six figures a year on your own, writing a blog or doing a show or whatever it is that you do, you can do this sort of thing. You don't have to shoot for this billion-dollar target. And I think that that, you know, going back to that and getting back to the basics is really kind of the secret to all this. And I hope the book helps people understand that.
Thank you so much.
And some of it, too, is just the getting people to believe in themselves. As you were saying, a lot of this advice is not necessarily like what we call rocket surgery. It's not that hard. It's not something you need a master's degree from to do. So a lot of what we're doing is just giving people the confidence to believe in their own common sense, that you don't have to spend forever and a day writing a business plan that nobody's going to read anyway, or coming up with stupid policies or five-year projections or all of this other bullshit that a lot of people think that you have to do when you're an entrepreneur. These are the requirements to be real business.
It's great stuff. Rework,
thanks,
the name
Chris.
Of the book, 37signals.com/rework is the website, but you can find it in bookstores, as I said, Audible, Kindle as well. And David Hennemeyer Hansen and Jason Fried, it's really nice to talk to you once again.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Great to be on.
Yeah, you've always been a great inspiration to me. And I'm sorry Amber's not here because I know she's a big fan too.
Well.
Soon.
Yeah, we'll see her again soon.
Get you back. Yeah. Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
All right. See you.
Bye. Bye, Jason.
Bye, guys.
Bye, David.
I'm actually glad Amber wasn't on because
you get to be.
I learned a little something.
Yeah. Now, did we give you a copy of the book?
Not that I wouldn't have by reading the book alone, but those guys, both of them, really kind of, you can tell that they really believe what they're talking about.
They're actually two of the coolest people in the business.
I mean, that means a lot to me because I tend to, I mean, full disclosure, it's like I'll go business book and somebody's just trying to make a bunch of money by telling other people stupid stuff that's very obvious.
Yes.
I think David made that exact same point.
Yes.
It's like, 50 pages into the book, you go, I get what you're doing. You don't really mean this. You're not really helping me, or it didn't have to be this sort of long and bloated. And I think I know for myself anyway, I've never liked the idea of starting my own business because, I don't have that kind of money. I want to be able to live in San Francisco and at least have some sort of a, fun lifestyle and all that stuff. And It's interesting that maybe not everybody, but a lot of us who have these preconceived notions of what it means to be an entrepreneur just have to change our attitudes about it. And, hear firsthand from folks who have done very well for themselves and go, hey, you don't need to buy into any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Meetings are toxic, which is like the best thing I've ever heard in my life because I hate meetings.
Unplug your headset.
Cyloning.
So weird. I'm going to give you the new one. Yeah, they say fire workaholics. I love this. Our culture celebrates the idea of the workaholic. Not only is workaholism unnecessary, it's stupid. Working more doesn't mean you care more or get more done. It just means you work more. Workaholics wind up creating more problems than they solve. They even create crises. They don't look for ways to be more efficient because they actually like working overtime. They enjoy feeling like heroes. They create problems just so they can get off on working more. I love this. It comes from their own experience. It's like they said, and that's what really makes us valuable.
Yeah, and I think that they really touched on a good point with when someone says, well, that's not how we do things. You're already lost. You're already...
Right.
You've already closed
off
the potential. And you and I both know, having worked in corporate environments, that is, and very recently in my case, someone saying, well, that's just not the way we do things here. But I have a good idea for how it would be different.
Right.
Well, no, that's no, just not. No, no, no. That's a different department. And
they pat you on the head and say,
I mean, it's just
thanks.
A no thing.
Yeah.
It's a we don't want to hear it. It would be too hard to change. We have to come to this meeting room every day at 10:30 physically and
this
sit here.
This is how we do it.
Because this is how we do it. And if something changes, then maybe we'll die. I don't know what anybody's afraid of, but.
This is, for me, I kind of fell into this and, it just started and it grew and it kind of fell. It was never a plan. And now I'm feeling like, boy, I sure need something like this to help me figure out what the hell I'm doing.
But I think you, I mean, your story, accident or not, is kind of what Jason and David
I think you're right.
were saying.
This is what they're talking about.
You wanted to do something you enjoyed, and it right. did start out very small.
Right.
I mean, Twit wasn't what Twit is now.
Yeah, it's still pretty small.
But, I mean, along the way, it's become something that's, you figured out ways to expand, and now I can watch you on my iPhone.
And you too.
And I do.
And you too. Let's see, real quickly, you've got some links on, these are really interesting. What is this tech, I mean, sorry, Media Gazer.
Oh, Media Gazer.
I might start to, this is really interesting.
It's really, well, so what's cool is that if you're a fan of techmeme.com.
Which I am, huge.
Which I am too.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, you know, not to make the techmeme editors think any more highly of themselves, but, I mean, that's kind of like the first link that I open in the morning.
Yep.
Because I just want a general idea of what people are talking about. And techmeme, for the most part, is very tech web business oriented. So it's a really good sort of... snapshot, algorithmic, and also you know, editor driven of the tech world and what everybody's talking about and who's mad at who and blah blah blah. Media Gazer is it's the concept and even the look of it. If you go to MediaGazer.com, it's just like Tech Meme.
It does look the same.
Yeah, I mean the way that it's structurally set up is almost indistinguishable except a different color palette, which is actually good because if you're used to Tech Meme, then you know, you kind of understand
what the hell.
Yeah, where do I gaze?
Where's
the media? But what's nice about it is, and this is, you know, Media Gazer is the sort of thing that I think will appeal. It appeals a lot more to the literary, journalistic folks, not only that work, you know, in that field, but people who kind of like to follow it. I see a lot more kind of New York-based stories. And that's not totally true. I mean, that's a generalization. But, you know, following the way that media works, and believe me, some of this is crossover to what would also be considered.
Oh, there's a lot of it. A lot of the stuff we talk about all the time.
Exactly, because it's the way that it's going to change how we eventually use technology and media. But the stories as a whole are of a different genre. It's more of, you know, where is the publishing industry going? What is the iPad?
Right.
What's going on with the, you know, the relationships that are going on and how it's going to change the way that that industry works?
You know, it makes me wonder if there might be a whole slew of sites like this that cover individual slices of you know, topic matter. I mean, this is great.
TechMeme has kind of tried to do that already with sort of other, you know, sort of niche genres like sports. And I as far as I know,
I mean, this is not the same company. I mean, they're doing exactly the same things as Tech Meme does. They even have the sponsored posts on the right.
Oh,
I mean,
oh, it's the Tech Meme folks.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. No wonder it looks so much alike.
Oh, yes.
I thought, wow, they really are just blatantly ripping them off here.
No. This is not a competition copycat.
So this is what Tech Meme maybe is going to do, is do different ones with different categories.
Well, I think that Tech Meme has been very successful.
Yeah.
Now, you're not necessarily going to get, you know, you go, okay, tech. That's as you and I know, that's a vertical that people, if you're into it, you're really into
it. They're into it.
You know, they gotcha. Hair products, or that's a stupid example, but there are certain other...
Hair products is good. No, that's a good... that's a very good topic, yeah. Sure.
Not really. But there are certain verticals, you know, Dig has figured this out sort of by trial and error, that there are just certain categories that stick better with people than others, especially if you're coming out of a tech-centric sort of center, right? Media is a good offshoot. At least it seems to be. At least,
perfect.
You know,
it's very closely related. And we do, you know, Alex does a This Week in Media show, which does. It's completely overlap stuff we cover on on our show. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
And in fact, the top story on Tech Meme is our next story, which is location data. Twitter is going to turn on, you know, this has to do with South by Southwest, right?
Well, it does. And the funny thing about it is how I was mentioning before that all the conferences just seem to be, everyone's just doing it first because they want to get 2 weeks on the next guy is like, now you hear that Facebook's going to allow that for their 4 zillion.
Do you think this is maybe a little scary? Facebook, this is according to Nick Bilton writing in the Bits blog on the New York Times.
Right.
Next month, there'll be a new status going through your status updates on Facebook, your location.
Right. If you so choose, and they've made it very clear that you have to opt in, and you know they're not going to, nobody's going to get
how will it know
stalked because of this. What's this?
How will it know? Because I mean, Facebook has a mobile you know tool, and I have Facebook on all my phones, but I think really mostly Facebook is used on desktops, isn't it?
Yes, but there are all sorts of services that have Facebook functional that you know that are using the API to be able to post to Facebook. For example, you know, like your Foursquare check-ins.
So Foursquare could go to Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Well, it does. Mine does go to Facebook right now.
Does it?
Yeah. When I
check
in,
I turn all my stuff off because I check in a lot of places, and I feel like it'll annoy people. But
I love annoying people. That's what
but
I live
what's
for.
What's you know Twitter and Facebook is like they're just. You know, it's one gets something and the other gets something. But Twitter is going to have this actually is already functionality. I've seen it in my stream. A few people, you know, there's this little sort of blue pin that's near their, you know, the time of their status updates. And you click on and you see the map. And of course, this is something that you have to turn on in your Twitter settings as well. That will be functioning at South by Southwest. The Facebook stuff isn't going to come till later, not much later. But still, it sort of matters because, you know, people will adopt something that they understand right away, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you and I, we'd float around joining everything.
Oh, yeah.
And,
that's what
we do for a living. But for the most part, you try something and it works and you go, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And maybe it's just the first thing that you try. So it is very interesting to me that it'll be interesting to see how this all works for the little Foursquare and the even littler Gowalla, which, you know, really aren't that little, but I mean, they're not of the size of these big companies at all. And the big companies go, oh, okay, geolocation. We got to add geolocation into this sort of thing. So it's like, do you like your little service that just does the one thing well and maybe expands a little bit, but is sort of the gamey aspect of it? Or do you want it just all into this huge conglomerate of location and status updates and photos and everything else?
You know,
what my answer is.
I've kind of become a fan of these kind of specialized, like Blippi, which is a specialized Twitter that says what you spent money on.
Mm-hmm.
And my newest thing, and Robert Scoble, of course, turned me on to it, is PlanCast. Do you know about PlanCast?
Yes, in fact, I have been using PlanCast, not really for very long.
I like it.
But quite a bit now that everyone's planning their South by South part. Through PlanCast. And what PlanCast is good for is it's not like Evite where you have to RSVP and you'll keep getting bugged about it. And it's not like a Facebook event because Facebook events, I still don't think work right.
Right.
You get, you're invited to an event.
It's too complicated.
And it kind of goes away, and then the event planner has to send you a Facebook email if it needs to be updated, and there's too much clicking going on. And I've never really felt like that worked very well. I miss things, and PlanCast is pretty dead simple, and it's kind of like there's certainly no RSVP on your part that you have to engage in. You just kind of go like, yeah, sure.
It's a stream of the stuff that you and your friends do. So very much like Twitter, but instead of being just random posts, it's stuff you're going to be at. You're going to do.
Yeah, stuff you're going to do.
Perfect for South by Southwest because I can see who's going to which events, and then
exactly.
I've been scanning through them and saying, oh, I want that one, so I'll add it.
Right, and in South by Southwest, of course, is a lot of events and parties in a very short amount of time. So, of course, right now, PlanCast looks very eventy.
Oh, yeah.
But let's say we all get home and we're back in the Bay Area or wherever it is we all live. And, you know, you and I say, hey, you know what? Let's go see Alice in Wonderland.
I could see that you were going to be going through it, and I would see that.
Yeah. And it's something that I think, hey, more the merrier. This is where I'm going to be. Just come if you want. And we can, you know, by the time it's time to leave for the movie, I might sign on and go, oh, cool, there's going to be some other folks there.
Right.
We'll say hello. So it can be really casual. It doesn't have to be somebody's birthday party or a big, you know, Facebook conference or whatever.
I've really become a fan of this. Yeah, I've really become a fan of this. And between that and Blippi, I really see there are going to be a lot of these. I guess really maybe there's going to be too many. We maybe have to have a shakeout again. But of different kind of specialty Twitter things.
Yeah, I like the it makes me a little uneasy when one service does it all, because it is convenient, yes, but then I don't know. There's just the one service.
Okay.
And do they really deserve all of that? I guess it depends on how well they do it. It just makes me uneasy. I'm not sure if I can explain it right. But at the same time, there's only so many hours in the day. And there's only so many services that do one thing really well that I can put my time into.
See, for instance, Leah Culver's going to have a cupcake social on Sunday afternoon from 4 to 6 at the tiniest bar in Texas. See, I want to go to that.
You want to go to the cupcake social.
So I'm going to say count me in, and now it adds me to the list of people going to that, along with 181 other people, so you can see who's going
to
be there.
And that's it. That's all you had to do.
That's it. I just clicked that button.
That's all you had to do. And then you sync it with your iCal, and you're good to go. You never have to really think about it again. You're just going.
It was a really good way for me to figure out what I want to do in Austin. I may have some duplications, but at least now I have this list of things that I've said, yeah, I want to do that. And it includes, by the way, not just parties, but, you know, conference seminars and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that has a start time, really.
I guess I should start putting my shows in there. We could all meet.
Yeah. You going to be here? Yep.
Well, we better get an end time to this show, because as much fun as I'm having, I hate to stop, but...
You've got other stuff. I have to go do a new TV interview anyway.
Oh, yeah? What's that all about?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I hope they don't sandbag me or anything.
I don't know.
Cool. No, they're cool. They're cool folks down there. I think they just kind of want to. I think they might be interviewing a variety of people about just kind of web video, working in the industry, and thoughts and feelings. I've got a lot of those, so I guess I'm the right person to talk to.
One last link from Sarah Lane: fav4.org. Fav4.org. This is about as simple as you can get.
It's the simplest thing in the world, and that's a good and bad thing, because what you do is Fab4 is the little gimmick is when you launch your browser window, whatever browser it is you're using, you probably just have four main things that you're going to want to check before you start going into surf mode.
These are just big buttons.
So these are just big buttons that will link back to your favorite things. And of course, so when you go through your options and you click on My Fav4, then you see that, there's a million and one services that
this is
you
can. So silly.
I know, isn't it the silliest thing? Well, at first I looked at it and I went, my first reaction was, wait a second.
I can do that with my homepage, can I?
Where's the customized URL? This is ridiculous. Why, I would want to have SarahLane.com be one of my big four. That's just so stupid. But then I thought, well, you know what? This isn't a service for me, but I know people that would really like the simple I hate to say, it'd be great for my grandma, because my grandma wouldn't even be able to use this, but it'd be great for a lot of folks who like the idea of having four places that you just, it's right in your face when you launch your browser, you don't forget to go. Or if you take it a step further, what I find that I get into the habit of doing is I go to the same 10 sites over and over and over. And I like them and I get a lot out of them. But because of my habits, I realize that I have sort of stagnated and I'm not, I'm forgetting about all the other good stuff that I don't go to. So what if you were to force yourself to pick four new start page options, on any sort of regular basis, and kind of just keep, your eyes on things. And this is, again, for people who maybe aren't into the reader, the RSS readers as much. They kind of like the visual aspect of it. I think it could work for, you got to be the right kind of person, but I think you could make it work for you if you're sort of bored with your setup now or are into discovery or want a big ESPN button on your browser window. That wouldn't be me, but maybe.
Yeah, Miss Sporty Spice.
Oh my gosh, I actually do love sports, but I don't read ESPN.com on a regular basis.
No. What's your favorite sport? You like baseball, don't you? You like to baseball games, don't you?
Yes, me too.
Because it's pastoral and it's
and
calm.
They see the Giants. They're looking good.
That's what spring training. You know, I used to say that my three, four favorite words in the English language: pitchers and catchers report. I always love spring training.
Yeah. Well, I hope. Well, we'll see. We'll see how they really look. But
they beat the Dodgers.
They do this every year, though. Oh, the Giants! They could really take it.
There's nothing more sad and pathetic than a baseball fan. There's certain teams that really. I'm not going to name names. That really, it's sad. But almost in general, you know, you just. Yep, this is going to be our year.
Yeah.
It's going to be our year.
Yeah, Sarah, as a 49er Lane. Fan, I've been saying that for a while, too.
It's going to be our year.
Maybe this year is the golden year.
Yeah. Sarah's website, sarahlane.com. That's where you can keep up on her. You can also follow her on Twitter, S-A-R-A-H-L-A-N-E.
Very good.
Soon to be in a venue near you. Let's hope. Yes, she's pointing.
Here's hoping. I got to change that picture. I don't even look like that anymore.
Yeah, but that's cute. That was on the attack of the show, I think.
No, that was Pop Siren on Revision 3.
Oh, that's Pop Siren. Okay.
Yep.
It's cute. It's a cute picture. I like the black and whiteness.
Well, yeah, you know.
It's the new hotness.
I change it up.
Sarah, you're the best. We'll see you soon. Thank you for filling in. We really appreciate
it.
Thank you for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on Net at Night.